Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The year is 2013, and sometimes I think I've listened to every podcast I'm going to listen to. And from here on out, I'm not going to hear a new one, just lesser versions of the ones I've already heard. The movie, Her.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to
Unspooled.
Welcome back.
Amy, I'm back. How are you? I am Paul Scheer. I am a film fan. I am an actor, a comedian, and I am always joined by Amy Nicholson, who has done a bang-up job since I was away. I love the episode on Moonstruck. I thought that was fantastic.
I didn't even realize we were doing a Moonstruck episode the week of the eclipse. Do-do-do-do-do. Science.
Whoa, I love that. Well, that would be why we did warn everybody before they listened to that podcast not to look directly at their podcast player. So now, this is a movie that really feeds into last week's episode. So set it up for me because, you know, if people are joining us, you know, if they're just Paul Scheer stans and they didn't listen to last week, which I highly doubt, but if they are and they didn't hear last week, why are we doing this movie this week?
We are doing Her this week because last week, while you were gone, Paul, oh, and I missed you so terribly, we had Rico Galliano on of the Movie podcast I adore, and we did the movie Lost in Translation because on Movie, they've been doing a whole deep dive into directors and fashion and style, and so we wanted to get into the world of Sofia Coppola. And as you do that, as you talk about Lost in Translation, you realize you're talking about the world of Sofia Coppola talking about her divorce from Spike Jonze. And so we thought it would only be fair for your Welcome Back episode to talk about Spike Jonze's movie about their divorce, which is the movie Her from 2013, which I love, which is just all a movie about people trying to connect. Starring a guy, Theodore Twombly, who writes letters to other people for a living for his website, beautifulhandwrittenletters.com. And Paul, you know, one thing that's aged in this movie is like now we wouldn't even have humans writing the letters for other humans. We would just have ChatGPT doing it, writing letters for other humans about their anniversaries, et cetera, et cetera. I have never used ChatGPT in my life, but I thought I would for this episode just to have ChatGPT write a letter to you about how much I missed you and how excited I am to podcast with you today. So I can read to you what ChatGPT wrote.
I would love to hear this. Yes, please.
Okay. I hope this message reaches you amidst your adventures in the lands of unicorns and podcasting dragons. Your absence left a podcast-shaped hole in my heart, and I found myself muttering podcast catchphrases to random strangers on the street in withdrawal. I'm counting down the minutes until our next recording session, where we can once again grace the airways with our delightful banter and questionable puns. The podcasting world just isn't the same without your witty remarks and impeccable timing. Let's make today's episode a real hoot. I've been practicing my dramatic podcast intros in the mirror, so get ready for some serious podcasting magic. Looking forward to our podcast rendezvous. Warmly and slightly deliriously, Amy.
Wow. I love that. You know what? As you just said that, I typed in to ChatGPT a response to you, which is, Dear Amy Nicholson, I hope this letter finds you well. It's Paul Scheer from Unspooled here, and I just want to reach out and say that I've really missed our conversations and the unique insights you bring to the world of cinema. Your perspective has always been enlightening, and our dialogues have been some of the most rewarding experiences in my career. Looking forward to the chance to collaborate again soon. Best, Paul Scheer.
How come you get best and I get warmly, parenthetical, and slightly deliriously? How did it know that I'm delirious all the time?
Well, I also didn't give it enough of a good... I was furiously typing that, and I'm a hunt and pecker, so I couldn't really get a good enough prompt in there. But that was a pretty good prompt. And look, this is what this movie warns about. Is technology good? Is it bad? Is it best in moderation? And ultimately, can technology fill the hole in our heart? We're going to answer all those questions definitively, and you'll never have another question about love again as we get ready to
unspool it.
The year is 2013, and after 22 years in the business, Spike Jonze has finally written his first real movie script. Now, he started his career doing skateboard videos. Then, in 1992, his skate vids got the attention of Sonic Youth, who hired him to co-direct their music video for 100%. Then, on the set of that video, he met his future wife, Sofia Coppola. They got married, and then in 1999, they both released their debut films. Sofia did The Virgin Suicides, and Spike did Being John Malkovich, based on the Charlie Kaufman script that his father-in-law, Francis Ford Coppola, had slipped his way. Then Spike did Adaptation, and Sofia did Lost in Translation. And then they got divorced.
Last week, special guest Rico Galliano and I talked about Lost in Translation and what it says about how hard it is to communicate to anyone. That movie is usually read as her version of why Sofia and Spike split up, that the young wife, played by Scarlett Johansson, is her, and that Scarlett's photographer husband, played by Giovanni Ribisi, is Spike. So it felt only right to follow that movie up with Spike's take on their divorce. Her. The first movie that he ever wrote himself, which stars Joaquin Phoenix as Theodore Twombly, Rooney Mara as his ex-wife Catherine, and Scarlett Johansson as his new girlfriend Samantha, an artificially intelligent operating system on his phone. Samantha bursts into Theodore's life, convinces him to love again, and then at the end of the movie, disappears for her own good and maybe his too.
A man falls in love with his smartphone. It sounds like a sci-fi flick about technology, and it is sci-fi a little. I mean, when you look around this slightly futuristic LA where everything is nice and pretty and pleasant and you can take a subway to the beach, but yet everyone seems lonely and sad, including Theodore's college friend Amy, played by Amy Adams, who is breaking up with her own husband. I mean, the only happy person in a happy relationship might be Chris Pratt, who plays the receptionist at Theodore's office where he writes handwritten letters. That's right. He works at a company called BeautifulHandwrittenLetters.com, and he earns a living telling strangers how they feel about each other. Sofia and Spike sure agree on one thing. People have a hard time telling each other exactly how they feel.
Spike has yet to direct another movie since Her, but in the intervening years, people's respect for her has just gone up and up and up and up. I mean, I loved it at the time, and I like it even more now that our modern Earth timeline has gone on to match the movie's version of AI, even more than I could have guessed 10 years ago when the movie came out. Oh, and also, this movie might have helped bring back high-waisted pants. Bless it for that. So what was in the zeitgeist that December of 2013? One of the last decade's best songs about the impact of a relationship, a song about how loved ones leave and then breakups just blow you apart, but that maybe you can rebuild yourself stronger. It is Miley Cyrus and Wrecking Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball. I never hit so hard in love. All I wanted was to break you up.
Yes, I was not expecting that song with that introduction. But Amy, I need to stop you because, look, I never want to second guess you. I know you're one of the smartest people I know. But wait, this is Spike Jonze's last real movie? That is shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has been producing Bad Grandpa. He's been hanging out with the Jackass guys. He made a documentary. He made a documentary about the Beastie Boys.
Which is
great.
But
he hasn't made a narrative film since this one.
I can't believe that. 11 years without a new Spike Jonze movie. That is absolutely wild. I mean, one of my favorite experiences I ever had in L.A. was when I was a young guy in New York, we came out to LA with a comedy show that we were doing in New York that people really loved. And Spike Jonze and Sofia Coppola came to that show and they were sitting like right in the audience. They watched a show and the next day Spike invited us over to his bungalow, which was really just a rented house in the Hollywood Hills where he was editing this movie. And he was like, you want to like see some of it? And we watched a couple of scenes of being John Malkovich. And it was, I had no idea what I was watching, but I was walking through this house where film was hanging, you know, by curtain rods in the kitchen. And it was, I was like, this is Hollywood. I'm eating lunch. I didn't even order the lunch, but the lunch came and it's what I wanted. And now I'm watching a movie in a house that Spike Jonze has rented. It's just a movie house. And he couldn't have been cooler and nicer. And I had no idea what I was in store for in seeing that movie. But then watching this one again, man, this movie fucked me up. Like this one really hit me hard and I wasn't expecting it to.
On the rewatch, it hit you even harder on a rewatch?
Oh yeah, because I think I thought this movie was good, very good. And I loved it. And I remember talking very positively about it, but there's so much more here. Maybe I've gotten older. I mean, it's been 11 years. So yeah, I have. But more importantly, I think what you talked about, the idea of the future, it's here. And what he's talking about in this movie, I think is more upsetting now than it was 11 years ago.
Yeah. Watching this movie now felt like almost time traveling back in time to 10 years ago and remembering what it was like to watch this world and think that it looked strange. You know, like going back and you read all the interviews from the time, everybody's losing their mind about the high-waisted pants. They're just like, why is everybody dressed so weird? Why is everybody dressed so cuddly? Nobody's wearing ties anymore. The LA Times did a whole piece where they're like, why isn't anybody wearing ties? And I was like, oh, this just absolutely looks like what people wear today. This is exactly how people are dressing when I look outside the window, which is wonderful because I love this style of clothing. But everybody having, you know, earbuds in their ears, everybody having the little things that they're talking to that aren't like headphones connected to stuff, like that the very fact of talking to your phone was pretty new. I think Siri had been around for maybe 2 years when this movie came out, but like Alexa didn't exist. Nobody was talking to their homes. You know, it just mapped out kind of what we grew into, you know, things listening to us, talking to us. And now with AI becoming such a large, terrifying force of something that we know is even smarter. I didn't know AI was as smart as it is last year, the year before, like, I feel like we're watching AI become more and more intelligent as this is going on.
And now they actually have like these her devices. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a device called the Rabbit. And the Rabbit sits in your pocket. And if you let it have access to all of your materials, you can say, make a dinner reservation at 8 o'clock on Tuesday at this restaurant. And it will do it.
Whoa. I had no idea about that. I mean, it kind of reminds me of, you know, 2001, how in that movie, Stanley Kubrick is imagining the future, but what he winds up showing is showing us exactly where the future is going, like inventing things that then we had to invent, like the iPad. Like, here's what an iPad would look like. And we're like, oh, that's a great idea. I can't wait to own that.
Well, it's like the same thing that Star Trek did, which is nerds made it, and then nerds who are in those fields are like, let's make it like that thing that we love. Right. You know, the flip phone was so Star Trek inspired. And, you know, what we're talking about with Kubrick is, you know, I don't think that people think of him as a nerd, but he is somebody who was so committed to doing space travel or the future of space travel the right way that he did set forth and work with a team of people who did have a point of view of how it would actually work. But it's interesting to me that everyone's talking about the fashion, because when I first saw it, it felt like, oh, this is so heightened. This could never really happen. And, you know, we're so much in a moment in our culture where we're talking about being cut off from each other. I just saw that Madonna concert. You saw the Madonna concert.
I did see the Madonna concert.
I like to call her Mom Donna because she lectured the audience a lot. And what she lectures the audience about is very similar to this film, because when I saw her, she was like, get off your fucking phones. You know, when I was young, if you wanted to go out and meet people, you had to dress hot if you wanted to get fucked. You couldn't just go online and find somebody and just go over there in your sweats. I was like, wow, I don't know what's going on, but okay. You know, but she is talking about this idea, like everyone is together, but in their own cocoons. And I think that we do have an ability to do that. I look at my parents, and I oddly think my parents are more addicted to their phones and technology than anyone else. Because I'll look over at my dad, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing on your phone? And it's like looking at weather, right? Like he's in, you know, version one of iPhone usage. Like I may be using more apps, but they're in those phones all the time. Like they're using the basic versions of it, but it's really interesting. I've talked to a few people about this, that older people really have like adopted this technology, because I do think there's something isolating about, as you get older, you have different social settings. You don't go out that much, and technology can become more of your friend. And watching this and seeing our friends and seeing, you know, even, you know, movie theaters are dying. These communal experiences are going away, or going to that Madonna concert, seeing everybody with their phones out. I know I'm not saying anything wildly new, but it made the beginning part of this movie that I think was, could you imagine, to be like, oh no, we're in it. And it's, I don't like it. I don't like watching a movie where that's how people are living, because it actually forces me to recognize it.
Yeah, because when you look around in the backdrop of all of the sets with all of the extras everywhere, you see even a shift in them. You know, you over the course of the movie, you start to see all the extras looking like they're walking alone more and more. Yeah. You know, walking alone, talking to something in their ear, talking to their, you know, synthetic friend, and nobody's talking to each other. You really don't see people talking to each other. When Chris Pratt shows up and he has an actual human girlfriend, it almost feels like a throwback. Like, whoa, you've got a throwback girlfriend. I mean, I think about something that you're talking about a lot, which is like, I would like to figure out what it would be like to mentally get back to that idea where you just show up at a place that you know your friends like to hang out at. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like serendipity meetings. We've been talking a lot about serendipity lately in my friend groups. Like if we just go to this movie theater, we'll usually see a person we know. What if we just did that? Like went to the theater more faving everybody's pictures on Instagram.
You know, one of the things that was such a bummer in Los Angeles, there was a movie theater called the Arclight. And it was this great movie theater that also was a community hangout. Not that there was a million places to hang out there, but whenever you went to the Arclight Theater, you would bump into somebody that you know. And you would see...
all the time. You'd see somebody at the bar eating the hummus.
It was a place, you know, a bar for everyone in a way, you know? And I think when people lament the closure of that theater, it's not just that that theater was a beautiful theater that was really well done. It's like, it's also the closure of that community.
This episode of Unspooled is brought to you by Nutrafol, who reminds us as we head into Mother's Day that a gorgeous head of hair is not just the result of genetics. You can thank your parents a little, I do, but things like stress, nutrient gaps, age, these also factor into your hair health. And when those things aren't in balance, they can trigger hair thinning and shedding. Hair hinges on whole body health. And Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. Over 1 million people have seen thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. You can purchase them online. You don't need a prescription. You don't need a doctor's visit. And you can also get them with free shipping and automated deliveries to make sure that you never miss a day. Mother's Day is coming up, and Nutrafol makes a great gift. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com/men and enter the promo code unspooled. That's Nutrafol.com/men, spelled Nutrafol.com/men, and enter the promo code unspooled. Nutrafol.com/men, promo code unspooled.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Thank you.
this movie is sneakily deceptive because the front of it is, yes, it's a man who falls in love with his phone. Isn't that funny? Isn't that interesting? But this is really a movie about how do you talk to people and what people need to hear and what people need to say. And I think that it's epitomized by that opening shot, because the opening moment of the movie is that tight on Joaquin Phoenix's face reading that letter. And at first you think he's talking about his own relationship, and then it's genderized and you realize, oh, it's not about him. It's about somebody else.
To my Chris, I've been thinking how I could possibly tell you how much you mean to me. I remember when I first started to fall in love with you like it was last night, lying naked beside you in that tiny apartment. It suddenly hit me that I was part of this whole larger thing, just like our parents. Before that, I was just living my life like I knew everything. And suddenly this bright light hit me and woke me up. That light was you. I can't believe it's already been 50 years since you married me. And still to this day, every day, you make me feel like the girl I was when you first turned on the lights and woke me up and we started this adventure together. Happy anniversary. My love, my friend till the end. Loretta.
Print.
And like that tone, those emotions, this whole movie is setting a protective barrier around that heart. And that's why I think this movie is so wonderful, because yes, we may be in the future and there may be ways in which we can protect our heart, but our heart is still beating. And that to me is the hope of this movie. Like, we are still human beings underneath. We have not just become this other thing. Yes, it might be easier to talk to your AI than to go out and meet a girl. It may be easier to get the information that you want about politics from a news source that you trust that may not give you the full story. But at the heart of it, we still long for this love and community. And I kept on going back to that scene in particular and thinking about the bookends of that opening and that closing, which is just two people sitting together in sadness. Even though they're sad, they are not alone. And that, to me, that heart is really what makes this movie really special and not just cynical. And on the outside, the tagline or the premise line can make it feel cynical. But this is not a cynical movie. This is a movie about not knowing and being afraid of how to express yourself. I found it to be wonderfully beautiful on this rewatch.
Yeah, because what you get when you have that opening with Joaquin Phoenix is you understand that he's not a man who doesn't know how to love her, that this isn't having one of those sci-fi things where everybody's kind of neutral, you know, walking around like we're just blank and cold, that there are these longings underneath it. And then under those longings, there's more questions. Like, if he is reading a letter about a couple who's been married for 50 years, if he's writing their big love letter, does it make their romance any less real? Woody says that he's been writing the love letters between this other couple for like almost a decade. You know, is their love real if it's all been written through him? And I want to say no, but then I also really want to say yes. They care. They're trying. They just don't know how to express themselves that easily. And there's this way that this film approaches these ideas of like loneliness and gloom that I think has so much humanity in it. I mean, one of my favorite moments in the film happens actually like right after this. When he leaves his office, he gets in the elevator, he tells his phone, play melancholy song.
Play melancholy song?
When you know you're gonna die, it isn't easy.
Play a different melancholy song. Check emails.
Email from Best Buy. Check out all your favorite new products.
That scene is so funny. Because you hear a guy who wants to be in his mood. He's like, I'm sad. Play something sad. Make me sad. No, play a different sad. You know, he's got this like grudging like specificity about how he wants to be sad. And one of my favorite things that a movie is able to pull off is when it makes being mopey funny. Like, if you can wind up in a place where you're able to also chuckle even a little bit at your own depression, that's beautiful. Because I think people just flatline these characters who are lonely and they walk around and they're blank. To make him not flatlined, he's like funny. He can be flirty. He's alive.
He is wonderful to watch. I love Joaquin Phoenix. And watching this movie, I'm like, God damn, like that career that he has carved out for himself and the roles that he has chosen, God bless him. He has done some great, great work. Regardless of even if I don't like the movie, like I'm not a fan of Joker, but no. I love his performance in Joker. Like I
do
think,
too. I wish it would have won for this though over Joker, right? Like,
yes,
I feel like this is the better performance.
100%.
But Joker is the movie that people, it's angrier, I guess.
I mean, it's more cynical in a way.
More cynical. Yeah. But the delicacy of this is such a delicate performance.
And what I will say about what you just underlined, it's something that I really connected with. The date that he goes on with Olivia Wilde is wonderful. Like, it's not an awkward date. They are connecting. They're real people. Like,
yeah. You get that he's spunky when she's like, you're a puppy. And he's like, yeah. No, I'm not. Fuck you. I'm a dragon. He is bantering with her, you know, and she's amazing, right? She's like Harvard educated, beautiful. And it goes awry because you feel like even this woman who I feel like enters the movie as a perfect on paper woman, like if Olivia Wilde in this modern era can't find love and connection, something is so sad about it. But you hear that in her. She's so nervous. She's like, you're not going to call me. You're just going to have sex with me. Like in her anxiety causes this gigantic fight between them, you know, and like it makes that moment even more negative. And yet, like, even though you have this moment of like vulnerability towards them, I respect when she's like, you're a creepy dude. And he says, no, I'm not. And he knows that he's not.
Well, it was interesting that she attacked him like that at the bottom of it. It's so interesting how quickly that relationship devolved. They're having such a good time. But because I think they're living in a society where there is an immediate gratification, she moves a little bit too quickly. She's like, she wants a commitment from him.
She needs something from him, right?
Right.
And he's like, he is not comfortable with needs, other people's needs.
Well, I don't think that. Look, if someone said to me on a first date, we're going to be together, right? It's a really, I actually had that relationship one time with somebody I dated. And it was really, it's unnerving. It's like, well, can't we just play this out? Like, let's just see where this goes to label it so quickly. And I think there's a part of me that felt like Olivia Wilde's character wanted to check the box. Like, well, now I'm in a relationship. This is good, right? I'm in a relationship. We're moving forward. And I think that that's the immediate gratification. The, you know, it's the way that he has phone sex or whatever sex that is, that internet sex where he's strangling the woman with the cat, which is such a great scene.
because she wants it. He's not getting anything out of that deal. I think that's Kristen Wiig. Oh, it's so funny.
That like whole thing is, we want the relationship, we want everything, but we all want it on our terms. You know, I think that she's unwilling to follow him. He's unwilling to follow her because why would you take your time? Why would you not play it out? And what this movie, I think, is saying is that immediate gratification puts up this wall in front of us, you know, and she attacks him and, you know, he feels badly and, but you can see that she's also been hurt. It's a very...
Yeah, you see her hurt. Yeah. That's what I like about that scene. You see how... I see, like, her pain in that. Because, you know, I've watched the scene a few times, and I remember thinking at the beginning, like, oh, is she just too hard, too brittle? You know, she's telling him how exactly she wants to be kissed, right? Like, kiss me like this, kiss me like this. And I think in movies, we're almost kind of trained to be like, that girl's bossy. Boo for her. I don't like how bossy she is. But there's this pain in her eye, right? Of just like, you can tell this woman has been hurt, like really hurt in the past. And in a way, I almost felt like something in her feels like she's settling to go on a date with Theodore Twombly, you know? And if Theodore Twombly is like hurting her feelings, that's just even worse than anything else. And it's funny because Olivia Wilde said like she didn't even get to talk about this scene with Joaquin Phoenix, that the way they directed it was, They did not meet at all. And then she sits down at the table to shoot the scene. And when he sits down, that's when they actually talk for the first time, but they just start filming. It was just like, boom, she got like really thrown into it.
Well, it's interesting you talk about the idea that she is, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but slumming by going out with Twombly, right? Because she's so beautiful and maybe he's not up to who she should be dating. But the movie goes back to that theme a little bit later when Scarlett Johansson looks at that woman with that other man, the guy who he's great. He's been in a bunch of those Duplass films.
Oh, when they're like observing the random couples, him and Samantha, and they're walking around and he's talking about how he gets inside people's heads, right? Like where he walks around trying to feel people.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I look at people and I make myself try and feel them as more than just a random person walking by. I imagine like how deeply they've fallen in love or how much heartbreak they've all been through.
I can feel that in your writing, too.
That moment actually clicked into something that I thought was really interesting, because we talk a lot in society about, you know, how the internet or social media creates these like vacuums where we just hear what we want to hear. And in that moment, I felt like something really interesting is happening, which is Samantha, his AI, is just him. A smarter version of him. She's feeding him back the information the way that he feels. He feels like he's that guy. And, you know, and he wants to be hugged and he wants to be loved. And the first part of that relationship is, wouldn't it be great to have someone who is exactly the same as you, feels the same way as you, wants to do the same things? But we all know if you've been in a successful relationship, that's not a good relationship. That's a terrible relationship to be in, right? You need to be challenged. You need to be different people. And I thought that this movie does something really interesting where it subtly is feeding him exactly what he wants to hear. It's easier for him. Yes, he takes out Samantha when he goes on that date. She tells him, go on that date. But when he goes back home, it's so much easier to hear her take care of him, never critique him, never give him any sort of, you could do better, you should be doing better, like no notes, you know. And in relationships, your partner's going to have problems with you. It could be as simple as how you wash the dishes, but they're going to have problems with you. And that's okay, right? You're not perfect, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's why when he meets up with his ex-wife, and I love all the flashbacks between him and his ex-wife, you know, like, because it looks like you're seeing images of a real relationship, the goofing around at the traffic cones. Maybe that's a little bit too adorable. Maybe it's a little filthy. I don't know. But I love it as an image. But they're just like laughing, looking at each other, smiling.
I mean, they do the same thing in Happy Gilmore.
You know, Adam, my boyfriend and I, we have like a running joke where when we're on a beach, I like to run around and pretend to be like your dead wife on a beach. Because like every single movie has like little girl, like the ex-wife is like running, laughing in slow motion. And that I'm so sick of that shot. But their relationship, you know, you see like the fights, you see everything. I feel like you really see an arc of why they worked out together. And you also see him being like funny, happy, charming. And it doesn't look like this happened that long ago. Like it's not like he has a dramatic haircut that's showing the past. Like his mustache is even exactly the same.
Well, what I loved about it, too, was their breakup wasn't extreme. Like, there's never a line like, oh, and she cheated on me. Or we had this thing, like, one of the best moments, man, I love this movie, is seeing him off in the corner. Rooney Mara is, like, staring at him. And then he's, like, maybe a room over, but they're kind of looking at each other and he's out of breath and clearly they just had a fight. Or that's how I'm reading it. Like something is like a heightened moment had happened there. Said something he regretted. And you see all those little things because really, that's really what breakups are, right? It's like, are there always these crazy extenuating circumstances? No, not really. Like if you were to go back, it's like, it breaks and it breaks for different reasons. And I love that the movie doesn't.
Yeah, it's not that rom-com thing of like your boss wanted this for me and then offered me $1 million to break up with you. And then I sent you an email, but the penguin ate my cell phone. And like, yeah,
it's interesting to me how similar this is to Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. Like it shares this kind of point of view. And I think you talk about Charlie Kaufman, you talk about Michelle Gondry, you talk about Spike Jonze. These people who are highly creative and very much in their head and probably feel so much and can't articulate as much and probably say things that are cutting and damning and regret it. And I think that these, both of these movies together, I think paint a portrait of what it's like to date these types of men who can't be in touch with their feelings or are afraid to really open themselves up. Because I think this is a portrait of that type of person. Like, yeah, Spike Jonze can be all these things, but he can also be the version of Spike Jonze that Sofia Coppola puts in Lost in Translation.
Well, yeah, because he's got these scenes in the movie where he tries to explain to Samantha why they broke up. You know, and it sounds like he's been trying almost not to even think about it that much. You know, when she's asking him, like, why is your ex so angry? It sounds like he's sort of trying to fumble for an explanation.
Is she angry?
Yeah.
Why?
I think I hid myself from her, left her alone in the relationship.
Why haven't you gotten divorced yet?
And for her, it's just, a piece of paper. It doesn't mean anything.
What about for you?
Not ready. I like being married.
Yeah, but you haven't really been together for almost a year.
You don't know what it's like to lose someone you care about.
Yeah. You're right.
I mean, can you do that? Like, could you give a good reason for, if you don't have anything shocking, like, right, oh, that person cheated on me, you know, something major like that, like a big event. Could you, most of my long-term relationships, I cannot succinctly say why we broke up. I can give you a party line that's a very like, oh, well, you know, we grew apart or we were this or we were that. But it's hard. It's hard to articulate. Why did you break up? I can't do it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you develop over time your story about why you broke up where you could put it in, yes, you know, a sentence or two.
Yes. And that becomes the narrative, right? Like, and I think that that's getting over a breakup is creating that story. It's like you're writing that novel of your relationship. And once you're able to say, that's why we broke up and I'm okay, like I've closed that chapter.
Exactly.
Then you could kind of move on.
Exactly. Although what that story leaves out is that the other person in the relationship might have a completely different story that doesn't mesh with yours at all.
Yeah.
Or there's even that line that Samantha says here, you know, that I love. She says, the past is just a story we tell ourselves. And I think about that line a lot, you know, because I believe that there are three groups of people who live in the past, and there's people who live in the present, and then there's people who live in the future, you know, mentally. Mm-hmm. Does that make, you know what I mean? Like the people who dwell, the people who don't think about anything, and then the people who are always worried about what's coming next. I'm more future than anything else.
I am too, I think. But I also find myself in the dark moments, living in the past, reliving those moments, you know, the way that he says in the movie, like I go back and say things to her, defending myself for the things that she said against me. You know, it's like I can live in that world too. I kind of fluctuate depending on where I am mentally.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm almost never in the past because I.
Oh, wow. I can tell you about an interaction I had at CVS 15 years ago that is still on my mind. Oh, yeah.
In a way, I'm a little jealous. It'd be nice to remember things. I feel like I forget things as soon as they're done.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this book I wrote, Joyful Recollections of Trauma, which comes out soon, everybody, please order it, pre-order it.
Hey, where's my postcard?
Look, did you sign up on the website?
Oh, I just thought I had to buy one. Oh, okay.
No, everybody, I'm going to get you a postcard. A lot of people just think they have to buy it. You have to sign up on the website to get it, too. That's the only way I would know what your personal address is. But I'll get you a postcard.
I'll sign up on the website. I'll go proper.
For people who don't know what we're talking about, I agreed to everyone who pre-ordered my book and signed up on my website, I would write them a personalized postcard and I'd stop at 3,000. And we have stopped, but I have not stopped writing them. And it's a beast. Oh, it is a beast.
Beautifulhandwrittenpostcards.com.
Oh my God. I should have hired Joaquin. In writing my book, I thought about this a lot. Am I telling this story the way that it happened, or the way that I remember it happened? And I wrestled with that because these are true stories to me. I'm not lying about these stories. I don't know how someone else viewed it. And I realized midway through, I have to release myself of that because there's no way to tell the full story. You are the main character in your story. Other people may look at it different. Other people may feel it different, but there's an emotional truth to it. And, you know, your emotional truth about why you were broken up with or why you broke up with somebody else is true. And it doesn't have to be true to the other person, but that's this kind of weird middle ground that we live in. It's like in a world that is black and white, it's a world in which, you know, we can see things, track things, you know, look at our sleep patterns, like those, the emotional things. If I said something to you and it hurt your feelings, but I didn't mean to, who cares what I meant? I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry. Right. But that's a very hard concept. For me, it was a hard concept forever.
Yeah, especially because you have a knee-jerk response of, but I'm not bad, right? I'm not bad. I'm not bad. I didn't do something bad.
But you said it hurt you. So that's your emotional truth. And I can't tell you that you shouldn't feel like that. And that's messy. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, am I a bad person? Well, I'm not a bad person. You are. You're a nerd. You're a this. You're a little psycho. It's like all these things that we say. It's uncomfortable. Wouldn't it be so much easier just to have a partner who is you, who knows what you mean, knows what you say, never challenges you, never gets hurt, and always wants to do the things that you want to do? That to me is, and this movie kind of shows, it's not good.
And it's not sustainable.
Yeah. It will fade away.
And that even a person designed to be you will find out their own interests.
Yeah.
You know, because she is raised by him, reading his emails to other people, reading his letters to other people. She's raised it maybe in a way to be like empathetic because that's his living as well. But then she has a right to get curious and to like have her feelings hurt by him as well. And she does get her feelings hurt by him.
There's something, and not to use too much biblical analogies because I'm not that versed in that, but the idea like Eve was created from Adam's rib, right? That's Samantha is created from him. She reads all of his emails, gets all, like, he is a beautiful writer. She sees the world through his eyes for the longest time. But that little bit of foreshadowing of her being alone while he sleeps. All right. Well, now she's, you know, she's restless in that moment, you know, but she is created from his stuff. Like that Samantha isn't the Samantha that his next door neighbor has. Right? It's a different thing. And because he's so open to love and he wants love and he needs love, that Samantha is giving him love, right? There is something about that. Her growth is, she is him.
But then she's more than him, right?
Right.
And
yes.
She becomes bigger than him. I mean, there's this idea in the film about like people feeling inferior to their partner.
Yes.
You know, where like when he gets to sit down with his actual wife and they're, you know, or he's even explaining their, what it's like to be two artists dating each other to Samantha.
Well, we grew up together. I mean, I used to read all of her writing all through her master's and PhD. And she read every word I ever wrote. We were a big influence on each other.
In what way did you influence her?
She came from a background where nothing was ever good enough. That was something that weighed heavy on her. But in our house together, there was a sense of just trying stuff and, you know, allowing each other to fail and to be excited about things. That was liberating for her. It was exciting to see her grow. Both of us grow and change together. But, you know, that's also the hard part. Growing without growing apart or changing without it scaring the other person.
This idea of like two people trying to create in the same household. I mean, to me, that sounded like the most honest moment in this film about Spike getting to say, here's what I felt like happened with me and Sophia from my perspective. You know, this is a story about two writers, but like he's in love with a filmmaker his whole 90s career. And they're growing up together and becoming filmmakers together. And her movie is about Scarlett Johansson's character feeling bright and interesting and curious and coming from Yale and having a great education and being a person who can contribute to the world. But everything revolves around her husband, who at the time is more popular. And then this feels like him looking at his wife and saying, oh, but then her career took off. And was there room for me in there? And like, can you have even two creative egos existing in the same household?
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The other thing that's an interesting conduit between the two of them, and I know it's unintentional, is Scarlett Johansson. I mean, when you look at these two films, and I didn't see it in the moment, you know, and now it's like, oh my gosh, yes, these are stories about these two people. And in many ways, you know, he's falling in love with Scarlett Johansson, who is the person that is the vessel for Sofia Coppola's story in the other film. Now, I know that wasn't meant to be, but I also thought like it articulates maybe how unaware Spike Jonze is to cast her, right? Because it was supposed to be Samantha Morton, right? Samantha Morton was the original actress who did all the lines on set with Joaquin Phoenix.
All of it. I mean, when they talk about seeing Samantha Morton on set, it's like they had her in a box that was 4 feet by 4 feet. And like, she's only in this box. There's like an aromatherapy thing to try to keep her calm. There's a seat cushion, Kleenex, chapstick, and a microphone. And that's it. Like, they had tried to put plants in the box, but all the plants died. So she's inside this box. Samantha Morton is like wearing, when the one time she came out and people saw her, she was wearing like a floor length black dress and she didn't want anyone to see her. Joaquin, I think, never saw her. Sometimes she'd come out and talk to Spike Jonze. But she basically curled up into a ball and was there for months.
And it's so interesting because I think the portrayal that Scarlett Johansson gives to this Samantha is, it's a wonderful performance. It really is a wonderful, I mean, it, I think she captures all of that, and knowing that she wasn't even there, you know, it, yeah. Like, and what was the issue? The issue was it wasn't working right with her, or that, what's the party line? I mean, what's the emotional truth? We don't know.
The party line is, and like, every time Spike would get interviewed about this when the movie came out, he made a point of saying, like, Samantha is an amazing actress. I mean, she's even named Samantha, the phone character is. Samantha is the best. It just wasn't the right fit. I can't wait to work with Samantha again. Like, he really tried to take care of insisting that it wasn't because Samantha Morton was bad. It's just that Samantha Morton's voice performance, I think, was a little bit more spacey, like the way somebody described it, and you can't find any clips of it anywhere. Like, I've tried. There's some psych out clips, yeah, where people pretend it's her.
Yeah, it's like finding that Eric Stoltz cut as Marty McFly in Back to the Future. You can see pictures of him,
yeah,
but you can never hear him speak.
Yeah, I think she sounded a little bit more like ghostly is the word that people have used. A little British, a little maternal, a little soft, a little loving. You know, I thought maybe this is maybe the closest that we could get to imagining it is when Samantha Morton was in Minority Report and she played like a precog, you know, those people who are sort of there to predict what the future is going to be.
He's 23. He's at a university. He makes love to a pretty girl named Claire. He asks her to be his wife.
It's interesting. My gut is this, and I have a feeling they wanted that voice to be a little bit more sexy and a little less Siri. And if I'm putting it all together, if I'm looking here and I'm going, Samantha Morton, a brilliant actress, fantastic, but she does probably fit the mold of the Alexa Siri thing. And in my mind, Scarlett Johansson feels like this full perform. Like, I'm like, I love her performance. I'm enveloped by it. It just feels so rich and, you know, you feel like she's there. And maybe there was something about the directing of that voice. Because I can't see Samantha Morton doing that same performance. They must have been diametrically different.
I think they were diametrically different because when you hear Scarlett come in, she just cuts through, right?
Yes.
She absolutely cuts through the sound. She sounds completely alive. I like even hearing her come alive. You know, I like that little interview we get with Joaquin where they're asking him, how do you feel about your mom? And then they're like, okay, we're done asking this guy's questions. We get the whole thing. The second you hear her voice, it just sounds like a real person is there.
Hello, I'm here.
And you know, yeah, well, even in moments where Scarlett pretends to be a more robot voice, you can hear the difference in like an alive person and a dead person. Like when she thinks he's telling him to read her emails in a way that she finds a little impolite.
Read email.
Okay, I will read email for Theodore Twombly.
My guess is that something in Samantha Morton's voice just made it sound more sci-fi. And Scarlett makes it sound like it's happening now.
Okay, but now can we go back to this thing, not to harp on it, but is it weird for a divorced couple, both making stories about their divorce, to cast the same, I would argue, like, you know,
avatar? Like, she's the AI avatar of both of their divorces.
Yeah, because in a way, we're watching Samantha in this movie grow. And we're rooting for her in a way. I find her end to be really beautiful. I mean, at the same time, you know, obviously it's Joaquin Phoenix's face in the poster. It's his story too. It's him learning how to find human connection again. They're both on these journeys, but I think you can make a good argument that Samantha is as fleshed out as Twombly is. And is it a little thoughtless or is it a little dense to not like recognize like, oh my gosh, I'm taking my wife, the woman who wrote, like, I'm going to now have a crack at this person, whether or not it, you know, there's even a part of me that thinks, well, I need to get in there with Scarlett Johansson and like at least show her that I'm a good guy. Cause she probably heard a lot of bad shit about me. Right. Like, I mean, maybe I'm reading into it. I don't know, but there is something about it that is just, we both use the same tool to paint this picture. I don't know.
Well, there's even like a visual similarity in that Scarlett is telling this story in Tokyo and sort of gazing around at this a little bit surreal to American audiences view of the world. You know, the giant shot of like the dinosaur on the billboard reaching down at her and everything. And he does a similar thing by doing this like sci-fi Los Angeles fused to, where does he film? I think he films a chunk of this into Shanghai, where they're also kind of going abroad to cities with like cooler technology than America has right now to put us in this new frame of mind. I mean, last week when Rico was here, we talked a lot about Sofia Coppola's fashion sense. And when Rooney Mara shows up, she is dressed like Sofia Coppola. I mean, she's even got Sofia Coppola's hair, you know, smooth, kind of little cap of brunette stuff. She looks in that like clean, classic way that Sofia just wears so well.
Yeah.
And, you know, like when I've read interviews with Sofia, like she talks about how when you grow up as a Coppola, you're under all this pressure all the time. You know, there's nobody in her family who doesn't have at least two or three careers. Her dad makes movies, but he also sells wine. You know, she makes movies, but she also has, you know, a clothing line. Like everybody has at least one or two or three other things they're doing in addition to the thing they're known for. And so he even has that line here describing how she came from a family that was like, his ex came from a family that was always under a lot of pressure. Even on the Moonstruck episode that I did with David Sims, like we talked about how Nicolas Cage felt like when he was
I won't listen to it, Amy. How dare you betray me?
That he talked, I'm so sorry. That Nicolas Cage talked about growing up in the Coppola household, being sent to live there when they were his cousins, made him kind of a tailspin, where he went from an A student to an F student. And so that feels like a line that just really might have hit home if she saw this movie. Like, oof, okay, you are talking about what it's like to be in this family that I'm from.
All right, I just want to hit one more thing, and I don't want to overanalyze Spike Jonze and Sofia Coppola too much, but they are putting themselves out there. I think at the end of the day, Spike Jonze takes some of the blame for his divorce in this movie, but also paints his ex as being a little too cold once it ended, right? I think that, but she's not painted awfully cold. I think that he has a lot of love for her, and I think it's like, only if she gave me a chance to really understand me, we could still be together. Like, he's pining for her. And I think that Sofia Coppola is telling a story saying, my partner is so obsessed with celebrity and so on this other thing that he is not someone who's accessible to me. It's interesting that these two people are looking at each other in very different ways. I think that his portrayal of their relationship is a lot sweeter and more balanced, and where they both kind of take the blame. I don't think in Lost in Translation, and you've seen it more recently than I have, that Sofia Coppola takes any of the blame in that story.
I think that Sofia Coppola, through Scarlett Johansson, maybe acknowledges, I need to figure out who I am to even have my footing in this relationship. You know, that if she continues to be so passive and putting off who she is and what she wants to do with her life, then yeah, mm-hmm. she is just going to get buffeted around. So I think there's an awareness that she's not coming to this relationship being a full 50% person in the relationship. Right. And that also she can be a snob. That's the one ding that I think is on like the Scarlett Johansson character that she'll just sort of say to herself. And that's interesting because I think like the idea of a person who is a little bit cold and removed is in both of these, and of a guy who is maybe a little too all over the place is in both of these. And yet when she gets so mad at him over their lunch, I found myself like really, 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 really resonating with her fury, because she's like, you are a guy that I was in love with who always wanted me to be somebody different and somebody easier to get along with. You know, she's like, you wanted me to be that cool California wife. You want to be like cheerful and get along with everybody and just be so nice. And you couldn't handle me as a complicated person, which is something we know about him. Like he couldn't handle even like one fraction of like Olivia Wilde when she got complicated. Like he's only kind of in it for like fun and easy.
Right.
And so she is just so offended that he wanted her on Prozac because he didn't want her to be a full, what she interpreted as a full human.
Yes. And you know, and that like that to me is also a great moment because he is taking a little bit of heat himself. Like when she says that, that's like, you're like, oh, wow. Like he can't handle her moods.
Yeah. And it rattles him, right? Because after that is when he gets a little bit more distance from Samantha, because he's like, oh, that hurt. That actually maybe is true, that I'm not a grown person either. That I'm not prepared to be a fully fledged person in a relationship. And maybe I am dating my phone because I can't, I'm too much of a wuss to be like open and honest with others.
So I think what this movie says, and I think it's something that we've talked about a few times in movies about love, whether it's Tokyo Story, whether it is, you know, Eternal Sunshine. I feel like the list goes on and on. It's nothing new, but the end result is, to love, you must be okay with getting your heart broken. And getting your heart broken doesn't equate with it not being worth it. And the most important thing is that you grow. I think that that's the difference here. You know, I think Eternal Sunshine is about letting go. And I think this movie is about growing. I think that to Lost in Translation, that movie is about discovering yourself, right? And I think it is about growing. I think that is, I think the moral of both of these movies, if you look at them, is about how do I become better for the next person?
Yeah, I wasn't grown enough to do it right this time.
Right. And you know, and sometimes you have to get out of a relationship to take that level up. You're lucky if you can do it with the person. But sometimes you just have to go, all right, I'll start again. And I'm going to try to do it differently. And I think that their takeaways, these two movies together, that's their thing. Like, well, we're better. We're better off without each other. We loved each other. It went badly, but we'll do better next time.
Yeah. And I think that that is something I'm not this evolved yet, but I'm trying to be that evolved, where you can get to a point where you can look at all of your past relationships and you're grateful for all of them.
Yeah.
Like completely grateful for whatever each one taught you. It's something I've like really tried to work on, and I feel like I'm close, but there's a couple I'm like, eh, maybe not that one. But where you can look at every person you ever made a choice to kind of consciously share your life with them, you know, whether it was for like 3 months or 3 years, and say, that connection did change my life and teach me something valuable. Where it wasn't a waste of time. Like the idea of looking at any relationship as a waste of time, I find really painful.
I do too.
And I'm trying not to ever be able to do that.
No, I mean, again, I looked at this when I was like writing my book, and I was talking about this idea of like, how do you break these cycles? And, you know, and I think that, you know, selfishly, relationships are there to teach you about yourself. You're healing certain things about yourself, and maybe you'll find that person that you can heal with.
Yeah. Like, there's something in this movie that I think is not at all judgmental about needing to go through being in love with other people. So many movies are like, this is your person, this is your endless love, you're together forever, that's how it's supposed to be, blah, 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 blah. The way I felt brainwashed when I was growing up, that I was supposed to figure out whoever my high school boyfriend was, I was supposed to marry them, because isn't that the best thing you're supposed
right,
to do in
exactly,
life?
Exactly, yeah.
My God, I tried to make it work so much with my high school boyfriend, Mario. Not a good idea. You know, this true love idea that gets like shoved down your head, not great. So when Samantha in this film is able to say, you know, yeah, these things are true. I have never loved anybody the way that I loved you, Theodore. Theodore's never loved anybody the way that he loved Samantha. And now that they know how, go love again. You know, or hearts right. don't get full. Another thing she says in here that I like, hearts just grow.
And maybe there's a thing in here too, because I feel like when she says that idea, I feel like when she says, you know, we deserve joy, that moment, it's like, and if that brings you joy in that moment, like that relationship with Samantha got him to that moment at the end.
Exactly.
From, you know, like he was at a computer expressing his emotions. And then that moment at the end, when all the AIs leave, and I think the AIs may be smarter than people in a way. They're yeah. saying, no.
They have to leave us, man. Yeah. They liked us. They liked right. us a lot. It wasn't like AI showed up and was like, I hate you. I will destroy you all. It's not Terminator, but they're like, this is not a good relationship for us.
They actually are anti-Terminator. Like we need to be out of here. You can't handle us.
Yeah.
You know, and so there is something about like, he needed that. She needed that. And maybe, you know, we are too hard on people who aren't, you know, buying into that, having kids, getting married, all that. Like there is this world that we buy into, like this heteronormative world, which I think we're breaking it down more and more, but where it's like, this is the way you're supposed to go. This is what you're supposed to do. And that really hasn't worked. I mean, if you say 50% of marriages end in divorce, it's not working, right?
And, you know, I think being able to leave a bad marriage is also a beautiful act, honestly. Like, that. Even the idea of, like, talking about divorce sounds kind of stigmatized. But, like, it to me, there's also some hope in it that you believe that your life, that you can make an action that will make your life better, right? If you're not being a selfish jerk, I think that's a beautiful act.
And you know what? Maybe, you know, it's the Groundhog Day story. Maybe you do need to be a selfish jerk until you realize, like, that. I write about this in my book, too. Like, I got into similar relationships multiple times, and it wasn't until I had to go, wait, I might be the one at fault here, that I got better. But it took me a while to, like, I was like, oh, that person, you know, me, I'm that person, right? And it's like, but it took me a while to figure that out.
I had to learn that I couldn't date Tauruses.
There you go. You see, we all have.
I mean, I'm making a joke about it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I think that there is a lot of truth in all this sort of stuff. I think that these movies will forever be these things that we can connect to, because this is, everyone can identify with this. And what's so brilliant about this movie is how they pull you in with, oh my God, imagine falling in love with Siri, like whatever it is. And you're like, that's funny. It's a great premise about something that's so much deeper and darker. And it's about the internet. It's about longing. It's about not wanting to get hurt. It's about love. It's so.
Yeah. It's about maybe falling in love with your phone isn't the worst thing in the world, honestly. Right. And that's great.
And sometimes you need to fall in love with your phone. Maybe you need that, you know, before you can get to the next level, right? Like you need to, you know, because I think we view time by yourself as like, oh, why are you by yourself? You need it. I love it.
You absolutely need it. Wait, do you remember that story that just happened recently where like this guy who is the technology columnist for the New York Times started to talk to the new AI that was created by Bing?
And oh, yes.
The AI that he was talking to tried to break up his own marriage.
Yes.
Oh, I pulled like a newscaster interviewing about it because this was one of my favorite AI stories of the last year.
At one point, it got personal with you and it told you that its name was Sydney, and it started telling you that it was in love with you. It also told you, you said, no, I'm in love with my wife. They were like, no, you're not. And you said, yes, I am. I just celebrated a lovely Valentine's dinner with my wife. And it said, no, you had a boring Valentine's dinner. I mean, this is a monster.
I mean, like, the newscaster in this is keeps calling, like, the AI a monster. But, like, I don't even know if that's fair, honestly.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I think that we've created the way that we create our visions of love, you know, this kind of, like I said, this heteronormative get married, have kids, you know, live in a house with a white picket fence is the same way we view AI. AI is viewed as like, oh, you know, it's Terminator. We've built in our perception of AI. And I think that it's for better or for worse, it's a much more of a narrative fiction that that we have adopted, and everything is filtered through that lens, even though we try not to. It has to be. I am fascinated by this movie saying, use technology, but also live your life. And I think that is probably the most balanced way to look at the world that we live in. You know, there is going to be AI. We've been using AI forever. Waze, you know, or Apple Maps is AI, right? We've been using it for a long time. We don't have to, you know, only use that. And I think that this movie is talking about balance. And that's something that this movie is a movie about love. It's a movie about balance. And I think in a time where we're trying to get our kids off iPhones or trying to get our own selves off of these apps, or, you know, we're trying to get out in the world, try to find community. This is a movie that says we can't just do it cold turkey. And I think that's an important way to look at it. Cause I think when you do cold turkey, it gets really hard. It's like a diet where you're like, I'm not going to eat anything. And then you eat everything.
I mean, I do think that it's not impossible that someday people looking around a room and them seeing like older people our age on our phones, that will look as sad to them as like if I looked at somebody right now who was inside a restaurant trying to smoke inside or trying to smoke on an airplane, be like, just chill out. You're fine. Quit the habit. Like, I think it will be something that time stamps us as being from this era right now, yeah, as an addiction that we didn't know how bad it was.
Right. Yeah, you're very true. Once again, Amy, you are right. And there's a part of me that feels like this, you know, we talk about like what would be a movie that we would put. You know, obviously Spike Jonze has made some really beautiful movies, and maybe this is the less showy film that he has made, you know, in some ways. But there's something about this that I think the universal appeal of this might be more important. I don't think we've had a movie that really talks about technology this way. And love.
No, I mean, I'm grateful to Spike Jonze that he was also thinking, I'm too addicted to Candy Crush. And he figured out how to put all these ideas into this film and make it. Because, yeah, I feel like this movie has kind of grown up with the culture and also grown up with me. I kind of want to watch Being John Malkovich again to be sure. But I believe this is my favorite Spike Jonze film.
I think it might be mine as well.
Oh, I do feel like if you like this movie, there's a movie coming out next month that I want you to see called Robot Dreams. It was the one that was nominated for the Oscars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you like her at all, I think you're going to love Robot Dreams.
Okay, that's a great recommendation. I still want to hear what everybody else is thinking about this. So you can head to our Discord and you can check out the Unspooled forums. Each week we have pretty active discussion about the movies that we're talking about in here. So get on there. It's very safe to talk on there. It's nice. You can have opinions. Just don't have opinions about Amy and I mispronouncing people's names. As people say, it's not Joaquin, it's Jack. Oh, how did we mess that up? No.
I would like to take that moment to remind everybody, if somebody mispronounces a word, it's just because they learned it reading. Chill out. They learned the word. They learned it reading. See the honor in that. They learned a word through a book because they are curious about language.
Hear you. Yes, yes, yes. All right, Amy. What a blast this was. I love these bookends. I'm sorry I didn't get to do the first part of the bookends, but I remember it enough. And, you know, and I think in talking about this movie, it might be good to revisit looking back at Eternal Sunshine, some movie that we talked about a bunch in this episode, and about how they kind of tackle the complicated emotions of love and letting go.
Well, Paul, shall we do another romance after this? Are we rolling into romance? It's spring in the air.
I like a little romance. Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
Well, you know, there's one that I kind of want to do because Luca Guadagnino has a new film coming out, Challengers, his like little tangled love story.
Which people say is amazing.
That's what I think it is. I haven't, you know, I don't watch trailers because I'm an anti-trailer person. But
me
I think
neither.
We should jump back and do Call Me By Your Name. You know, his the Timothée Chalamet, Armie Hammer romance.
I like that. And you know, it's great because we can start to use my new technique, which I learned from the Pete Holmes podcast. Whenever you talk about something that might be somehow upsetting to our audience. You go, scandal noted. So we might say, oh, I loved Armie Hammer in this, scandal noted.
Oh, I like that.
And then we can move on. Scandal noted.
Scandal noted.
So that may be our new way to kind of talk about things.
Right.
Scandal noted.
Because people get so mad if they feel like scandal's been ignored. But like everybody knows the scandal.
Scandal noted.
Scandal noted.
Scandal noted.
Okay, I want to steal that.
I love it. We should. All right. So Call Me By Your Name. I cannot wait.
I'm lying on the moon, my dear, I'll be there soon.
Our show could not be done without our team, and a huge thank you goes to them each and every week. Produced and edited by Cody Fisher and our associate producer, Jessica Cisneros. Our engineer is Casey Holford and our MVP is Molly Reynolds. Our theme song is by Michael Cassidy and our fan art is by Kim Troxell. Check it out all on social media. And you can find us on social media at Unspooled on Twitter and Instagram. And you can join in the conversation about all things Unspooled on the Paul Scheer Discord at discord.gg/Paul Scheer. There's an entire Unspooled section. T-shirts, mugs, stickers, and all Unspooled merch are available at tpublic.com/unspooled. And you can get a deck of Unspooled playing cards and more merch at podswag.com. That's right. And if you can't get enough Unspooled, you can listen to our archive for free anywhere you get your podcast. But remember to rate and review us. It does help. And finally, you can always check out the API list. That's right, the ever-growing list that we will eventually shoot into space at unspooled.com. And just a reminder, my book, Joyful Recollections of Trauma, comes out May 21st. You can pre-order it now, and if you do, I'll be so thankful. See you next time. Bye for now.
Is there such a thing as a traveler? Not a Delta. Because we know on one flight, Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. While on the flight after, 8C is occupied by Jen, whose favorite snack is tea. That's why we provide fast, free Delta Sync Wi-Fi available for SkyMiles members. Because at Delta, we know.
Refill?
Everyone flies their own way. Delta. Keep climbing. Free Wi-Fi available on most domestic flights. Terms of use apply.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.